A Thursday mailbag edition. Starting to feel like it's baseball season, fellas. Maybe it's because my football team got eliminated. I don't know, but starting to get fired up. Get fired up with me.
Oh, I'm there, 100%. I've been ready for baseball ever since like week 15.
It's time to pick some guys.
Oh.
It's time to talk about baseball on the podcast. Something like that, right? Isn't that what we're doing?
Yeah, it's beautiful. Are you going to join the chorus this year? Because, you know, we sing on the podcast quite a bit, me and Heath. So are you going to...
I've sung.
Have you?
Not on this podcast.
Okay.
Yeah, on the old fantasy, Daily Fantasy Live podcast.
Ah. Hey, listen, if you like fantasy basketball, please listen to the Fantasy Basketball Today podcast hosted by Chris. Occasional guest appearances by Heath Cummings, and Joe Polito is on there. And Joe Polito is one of the more underrated comedians in The Office. He's very, very funny.
Agreed.
And I did not listen to the last episode, but I plan on it because he makes up fake band names. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And I bet that was awesome. So check out Fantasy Basketball Today. We've got the Malik Smith, Shea Simmons, Drew Smiley deals. We've got Santiago Casilla signing a two-year deal with the A's. And plenty of emails, AJ Pollock questions, Jason Hayward questions, Michael Wacha. We'll talk about a lot of stuff today. So, the email address is fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. This will be our last show of this week, but we'll be back with either two or three next week, although, it is a short week with MLK Day on Monday. And, alright, hey guys, let's get right to it here. How about the Seattle Mariners wheeling and dealing this offseason? They've added Gerard Dyson, they've added Yovani Gallardo, and now, Drew Smiley, and the important pieces, I guess, in this deal with this three-team, what it essentially ended up being a three-team trade, Seattle getting Drew Smiley and Tampa Bay getting outfielder Malik Smith, who can run a little bit here. But let's start with Smiley, who was a favorite of mine and Scott's coming into last year. I don't quite remember where you guys are. I know Chris was a little worried about Smiley and his home run tendencies. Had a terrible year. 4.88 ERA, but was really good in 2015, at least in my opinion. Do you have any hope for Drew Smiley, the Mariner? Is he back? Are we drafting him? What do you think?
If you want to take a late round flyer on a guy who strikes out a batter per inning and has decent control, go for it. This is not a terrible. It's about as good a situation as he could have landed in. Safeco's a great place to pitch. The Mariners have, I would say, three center fielders playing the outfield for them right now. So the outfield defense should be very good.
Yeah, more wins than in
Tampa. On the other hand, all of those things were true in Tampa Bay. They had maybe the best defensive outfielder in baseball in Kevin Kiermaier.
But the rest of them weren't very good.
Okay. It's like a great place to pitch, though.
It is a great place to pitch.
And he had a 4.88 ERA, and his peripherals stunk, too.
Yeah, I look at him in the same range, Chris said it well, as like the Michael Pineda range. Like, it's right. The end of the draft.
You're hoping
later
for,
in the draft.
You're hoping for upside. It's what we did with Ricky Nolasco for like 7 years.
16-17 round.
I think the only difference between Smiley and Nolasco, maybe there was a good year in there for Nolasco, but Smiley did pitch very well in 2015. He
for
had
66
a,
innings.
A 3.11 ERA, he had 77 strikeouts and 66 and two thirds. That's pretty good. He only had one start of more than 6 1/3, though. And he did give up the home runs. But, you know, there's some pretty recent success there. And then as soon as he got traded in 2014, he went to the Rays. He had a 1.70 ERA in 47 and two thirds innings. And they traded David Price and got Smiley back, so they obviously liked him. You know, I don't want to completely give up on him. Neither do you guys, obviously. You want to take a late round flyer on him. So. All right, that is fair. What about Malik Smith, guys? What's the deal with him? Smith, not much of a hitter last year. He's going to be 24 years old in May. He batted .238, but he stole 16 bases in 24 attempts. He only had 189 at-bats and 16 steals. Is he AL-only at this point?
Here's kind of what I think about Malik Smith, is he was originally traded from the Braves because they had too many outfielders to play him. He was traded to the Mariners, who probably had too many outfielders to play him. And so then they sent him to the Rays, who also probably have too many outfielders that are better than him. I don't know that there's really very many teams, if any at all, where Malik Smith is one of the top three outfielders at this point in his career.
Okay. So we'll leave him as a steal source in AL only at the moment, right?
Yeah.
Are the prospects in these deals anybody that we need to know about?
Thomas Burrows is a reliever prospect, I believe. So there's very little interest there. Luis Gajara, I know Scott was pretty excited about him.
He was.
Had a breakout 2016 season as a prospect. He's a rare Brazilian prospect. He's only, I think, he just turned 20 over the summer. Had a 1.81 ERA last year.
Yeah, but he's on his way to the Braves, which is why Scott's
so excited.
Yeah,
he's on his way to the Braves. Gajara.
Yep.
The problem is he threw 69 2/3 innings last season. He made 13 starts in A ball. He's probably at least a year away, probably more.
Probably two.
Okay. Well, let's get right into the emails and tweets, guys. Oh, wait, no. Santiago Casilla. Santiago Casilla to the Oakland A's.
Just muddies and already.
Do not draft an A's reliever.
Terrible. Yeah. Someone's going to get saves there, but.
They've got some candidates. All right. So we're not going to draft Santiago
Casilla. They are the early favorites to be the team that has the most players to record a save.
They were probably up there last year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably not that many opportunities.
No.
That would be an interesting thing to bet on. Team that has the most guys recording a save. Yeah. All right. Here's a tweet from Ken to start things off. I know rankings are early, but why is AJ Pollock so down on their lists? Huh. Is he?
I have him 25th overall in Roto, right behind Trey Turner and above Brian Dozier, so I don't think this applies to me.
I have him 26th overall. So, or I don't think it applies to me.
Why does Scott hate AJ Pollock?
He doesn't at all.
I've got him 7th amongst outfielders.
And Scott's got him 8th amongst outfielders.
And that's like coming off a ruined season.
Now, Pollock was like arguably one of the best players in all
of
fantasy.
I think he was number one in head to head.
No, he was close. He was number three in point. He was the number three outfielder in points in 2015. He was number two in Roto. Slightly better than Mike Trout in 2015 when he hit .315 with 20 home runs, 111 runs, 39 steals, and 39 doubles.
The reason I have a hard time buying that just comes right back, part of the reason is the steals. I don't expect him to steal 40 bases. A bigger part of the reason is 111 runs was probably his best statistic. It's also the one that's the least under his control.
Yeah, that should be a pretty good offense, though. It's a great place to hit.
I think he'll probably put an over-under at 95. But you take 16 runs away, he's probably number 7 or 8 outfielder.
Anytime someone scores 110 runs, or really drives in 110 runs, I think you have to build in some natural regression there.
Speaking of that, I've got a very cool factoid on a player not related to this discussion at all, but it has to do with 110 RBI.
Oh, okay.
Last year, Albert Pujols drove in 119 runs with a 780 OPS. You know the last time a player drove in more than 119 runs with an OPS that low?
Never.
1910.
I feel like,
106 years.
Yeah, there was some guy on like those late Expos teams, I feel like, that had a couple seasons like that, though.
There were, like, Sammy Sosa had exactly 119 with an OPS worse than his. But since 1910, no player had ever had more RBIs and a lower OPS than Pujols had last year. He's probably going to drive in like 20 less runs.
Tony Bautista came really close.
Yes, he did.
He had 110 on a 728 OPS.
Hey, I never would have guessed this, but I do want to follow up on something that you just mentioned about AJ Pollock, right? He scored 111 runs in 2015, and he was the number three outfielder in points leagues, number two in Roto. You take 16 runs away from him, drop him down to 95.
Mm-hmm.
Let me put it this way. You take 46 runs away from him, and he's still the number four outfielder in points leagues.
What?
He was so much better. So that year, Bryce Harper was by far the best player in at the outfield position and probably all of fantasy. Then it was Jose Bautista. Then it was AJ Pollock and Mike Trout. And the two of them were 46 points better than the number five outfielder, Yoenis Cespedes.
Wow. Well,
that's the exercise I tried to do with Mookie Betts, where he's such an obvious regression candidate on both the runs and RBI side. And even if I think I dropped him 39 in combined between the two of them, and he was still pretty clearly my number two player.
Yeah, so I mean that just shows you how good the season was. 20 home runs, 39 steals. I don't know if we're gonna get 39 steals out of him, you know, but maybe you get more than 20 home runs this year. And he had 315. AJ Pollock. Yeah, I guess the overall question with AJ Pollock is, unless there's no reason for him to go in the third round except he got injured last year. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah, If you took him in the second, I wouldn't have any problem with that at all, as long as it's late second.
I'm 25th. That's a second rounder in theory.
All right, here's a question from Darren. Jason Hayward's retooled swing equals a return to fantasy relevance? Question mark.
We are going to have so many fights, and I wish Chris or Scott was on for this, because like this type of thing, Chris just pretty much universally dismisses always.
What, a new swing?
No one ever fixes their swing or finds a mechanical flaw.
No, not at all true. That is a ridiculous.
That's kind
of
true.
No, that is a ridiculous. No, it's just that we hear hundreds of cases of this.
So you ignore all of them?
No, and the ones that work, it works. You have to. It worked for this guy, so you have. But we ignore the ones that don't work. We don't know. We have no idea what Jason Hayward's retooled swing will look like or what the impact will be.
So do you think this is fake news?
I don't think it should change how I don't think it should change how we view Jason Hayward.
I think we should do a fake news segment somehow. I think that is funny stuff. This fake news thing is becoming so funny to me.
We did that in my high school newspaper. As like an April Fool's thing, and got in a lot of trouble.
I got in a lot of trouble once for posting a fake quote in my high school newspaper because I was too embarrassed to ask the girl for a quote because I had a crush on her.
Well, really? Yeah, you should have gotten in trouble.
I did.
For that.
I got in a lot of trouble. For
this was something we did on purpose.
I was a freshman; she was a junior.
We made it very clear that it was an April Fool's thing. It's just nobody looked.
Yeah. No, I just lied.
I want to hear more. What quote did you assign to this girl?
I don't even remember. She won Court Mat Queen, and it was something about how she felt about winning. Yeah. There's lots of traditions at high schools in the Midwest that they just don't like. Have you ever heard of a Letterman jacket?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay. They don't do that.
I've seen Back
either.
To the Future.
Yeah, they still do that in the Midwest.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, so Jason Hayward, right? He is changing his swing. I would have to believe that. And this is probably something you guys may or, I don't know, probably won't agree with. I have to believe that the contract, I brought it up with Justin Upton, yesterday. I'm thinking the contract maybe hurt him a little bit mentally, because Hayward is not a 230 hitter, and in the postseason, he had like, I don't know, three hits or something. He batted 104 with one walk and 13 strikeouts and 48 at bats, so he was a mess. But, you know, in 2015, Hayward was the number 23 outfielder in points, number 22 in Roto. In 2014, he was number 24 in points, number 34 in Roto. He only hit 11 home runs, batted 271. I never really liked him, where, you know, as a 6th, 7th round pick. But as like a 16th or 17th round pick, I'd be willing to take a shot on Hayward bouncing back and being maybe a top 30 outfielder in like the Brett Gardner way, where it's, you know, he's fine. You can plug him in. He doesn't have that much upside.
Yeah, I just feel like his upside is like Gregory Polanco's worst season.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Well, he can steal 20 bases, but it's going to be – he doesn't hit more than 15 home runs.
Right, but let's just say hypothetically, because I feel like whether it was the contract or it's the new swing or whatever – there's a slim chance that Jason Hayward is as bad as he was last year.
Sure.
He will be better than he was last year.
I agree.
And so let's say hypothetically that he's as good as he was as a hitter in 2014 and 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's on base as often as he was back then. He's a 350, 360 on base guy. He's going to score a ton of runs.
Yeah,
Maybe
the comp is like, is he kind of like a Dexter Fowler?
He could. That's probably like, Dexter Fowler last year is probably Hayward's upside this year. But Fowler was a borderline top 20 outfielder last year, wasn't he? In points?
Yeah, he's usually a number 3 outfielder in points, I think. I can check where Fowler finished.
Yeah, like Dexter Fowler, I guess he missed some time.
He did.
He had 393 on base percentage and scored 84 runs in 125 games.
And he was a leadoff hitter.
So Yeah, I mean, I guess he could score 100 runs in like.
And even if he scores 85 and he hits 280 and has 10 to 15 home runs and 20 to 25 steals, that's a number three outfielder.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could be. But yeah.
That's a relatively low upside.
Like, it is, but you know.
A player in the 16th round is a pretty high.
He is worth a late round pick. I will have him lower than everyone else.
I think I've got him right around number 44 in the outfield.
Okay. This is an email from Christian. He says, "Hey, Ray, Jin, and Leah, R-E-Y-J-I-N and L-E-I-A.
You really not know what this is?
Is it Star Wars?
Yes, it's the female protagonists of the Star Wars movie.
Yeah, I definitely definitely heard not know of that.
It's actually Leia, I think.
Leia, yeah.
Jesus.
Last year, I made several under-the-radar draft picks, which include guys like Mark Trumbo, Daniel Murphy, and A.J. Ramos. My question is, since Trumbo and Murphy are now very fantasy-relevant, what players do you guys suggest can be 2017's Trumbo and Daniel Murphy?
Hmm.
And who could get you 40 saves like Ramos or, you know, a lot of saves, let's say that, like Ramos?
I would say the reliever. Maybe he's not under the radar enough. We'll find out when we start getting ADP, but it's probably Kellyanne Herrera, isn't it?
He's not under the radar at all.
Yeah, like, that's the thing, is that, like, there are a handful of relievers who I think could jump into the top five at the position. I think Edwin Diaz is one. I think Kellyanne Herrera is another. I don't know if those guys qualify as under the radar. Maybe Ken Giles.
Mm.
We tend to hype a guy, and then if he's not exactly as good as we think he is, we just kind of forget about them, but Ken Giles was pretty amazing for most of the season. He basically had a bad month to start, but he was the guy we thought he would be.
Yeah. I like Ryan Dahl, by the way, to come out of the A's bullpen. I know they just signed Casilla, but they have like a lot of kind of over-the-hill.
Yeah, they've got like four guys who are just kind of meh.
Yeah, I think he's got the chance to be the best. That's more of an – I don't even know if he's going to get drafted because I'm not sure who's going to start their season as the closer. Who are some?
I will. Someone who could make a. Excuse me.
Oh wow, Chris, taking a phone call.
I'm very on popular. The podcast. That's wow. embarrassing.
Someone who could take a Mark Trumbo like step forward as a power hitter, and I think we talked about him on the last podcast. I love Jock Peterson, and I think he could have a. I still think he has a big breakout waiting to happen.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
He has a very high fly ball rate. He hits the ball consistently hard. He's been among the leaders in hard hit rate and exit velocity in both of his two seasons. I think there's still room for him to grow.
Here's three more in that same area. And no, I'm not going to say Jorge Soler. Randall Grichuk.
Yep.
Steven Souza. Domingo Santana.
I knew you were going to say Domingo Santana. I don't know how I feel about Steven Souza at this point.
He's been a poor man's Jock Peterson.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, and those guys are not that they're bad answers. They're not exactly Trumbo and Murphy comps, I don't think, because those Trumbo and Murphy had more success. It was very short-lived for Murphy, and it continued into the last season. But Trumbo at least had been... He was more of a bounce-back guy.
So you want older guys that are going to be like Jason Hayward.
Yasiel Puig is an obvious example.
Yeah.
Played decently in September, was actually seeing some very promising quotes from Justin Turner about how he has approached the off season and the last few months of last season, which was a difficult time for him. Yasiel Puig.
Okay.
And Miguel Sano.
No.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anyone else. I think that's good. I'm looking at some rankings and yeah, like we're pretty. Are we done with Carlos Gomez? Because he played pretty well for Texas last year. Do you think he could bounce back?
He played really well for Texas. He's a guy who was a former, I actually just wrote the Rangers team outlook, and he was one of the guys I focused on. He was a guy who was a borderline first round value.
Yeah.
Who you might be able to get in the 15th or 16th round. I'd much, if the price is similar, I would much rather have him than Jason Hayward.
Okay. Trevor asks, what are your expectations for Andrew Benintendi? At bats, home runs, runs scored. I don't know that you have to give a full projection here, but we talked about Benintendi last month on a podcast. This is the guy who was a lot better in points leagues than Roto because he hit 11 doubles in just 34 games, but only two home runs and one steal. And in the minors, he had a 540 slugging percentage, a really good ISO, 312, 392, 540 in 151 games with 20 home runs, 38 doubles, 16 triples. So he's more of the doubles, triples type, it seems, but he's still young. He's 22 years old, Andrew Benintendi.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing is with the at-bats, because I know if Scott were on here, he would say, you know, he's worried about the playing time. I think he would say that. He was 5 for 28 with no extra base hits, 3 walks, 12 strikeouts against lefties. But I looked at Benintendi's minor league splits, and he did not really struggle. He didn't hit for power against lefties in the minors, but he did hit for average in two seasons in the minors against lefties. Anyway, what are your expectations for the outfielder for the Red Sox, Andrew Benintendi?
270, 330, 440.
That's not so good.
I think with hit, he's someone that I put in our last, earlier last month, I think I put him as a player who I'm going to be lower on in Roto than the consensus. But in head-to-head, it's going to be really hard to pass up on him because his approach at the plate is stellar. Like, he does not strike out much. He's got a great eye. I think he could be a Christian Yelich type player this year.
Okay. Next up, let's go back. Benintendi or Hayward?
Benintendi by about 10 rounds.
10 rounds is a little steep, but yes, Benintendi.
Benintendi or Gomez, Chris?
Benintendi.
Benintendi.
Benintendi or Hunter Renfro? Benintendi, I'm guessing.
Benintendi. I have him in a very different range in my rankings than those guys.
Benintendi or Miguel Sano?
Now you're pulling on my heartstrings. Miguel Sano has so much more upside.
I've got Benintendi ahead of Sano in points.
I do too, but Sano has more upside.
But who are you drafting, Benintendi or Sano?
Yeah, the upside answer is not really
Benintendi
an answer.
In points.
Okay.
All right. This is from D. Deonda. Will Michael Wacha be considered a sleeper after last year's bad season?
Even Michael Wacha's good seasons wasn't that good. Like he had a 3.38 ERA, 181 innings. He won a bunch of games, which is what you would expect for someone pitching for the Cardinals. But he's a mid-3s ERA guy with a 7.5 K per nine.
He's not
something
a mid-3s.
I realized the injury problem he had last year was a recurrence of a problem he'd had in the past.
He's not even a starter right now, I don't think. I mean, he's not a guaranteed starter, put it that way. But, Chris, he's not a mid-3 ERA guy. He's a mid-3 ERA guy when you factor in last year's 5.09 ERA.
No,
he had a 3.38 the year before.
He had a 3.20 the year before that, a 2.78 and 64 innings the year before that. I mean, 3.38 was his high. That's not, I mean, I guess that's mid-3.
It was also his only full season.
His FIP for his career is 3.60. For me, that makes him a mid-3 ERA guy.
All right, and he's not a big strikeout guy. Career 7.8 strikeouts per nine. I just don't know that he's going to have a rotation spot.
I think he will. Like, I don't know who would take it.
Who would take it? Oh, man. So,
because even if Reyes gets a spot, there's still a spot for Wacha.
Is there? All right, I was reading on our website just a little, the write-up on him made it seem like he wasn't going to be necessarily, but okay, so let's see what Roster Resource has. They have Martinez, Wainwright, Mike Leake, Lance Lynn, and Michael Wacha with no Reyes in there.
Man,
he's got bullpen experience
possible.
Now. I'm not sure Waka's a starter for them. Wainwright, they should bump Wainwright out of there and cut him.
Well, I'm not a fan of Michael Wacha, but I'd rather start him than Mike Leake, I think.
You know, but sometimes it's more like who could actually pitch out of the bullpen.
Anybody can.
Yeah, I guess. Anybody can play first base. Anybody can pitch out of the bullpen. Next question from Nathan Pickle. Which rookie do you expect more out of, Yuleski Gurriel or Dansby Swanson?
Dansby Swanson.
Like, in terms of war, I would say, yeah, it's Swanson. In terms of fantasy production, in a standard points roster, I don't think you're going to win either one of them. I'll say Gurriel, though, just because there's some upside there.
There's definitely upside with Swanson, too. Don't.
Like, if he is, his upside is a top 12 shortstop?
Sure. I legitimately don't know what Yolesky Gurriel's upside is.
Okay.
Like, he's a 32-year-old who couldn't hit in the minors or the majors last year, extenuating circumstances of him coming in midseason, but he's got to hit, like, right away. He might not have a job in May.
Right. Swanson's going to have a job. Swanson's much safer in, like, an NL-only type environment.
But I think there's still plenty of upside. He's a 22-year-old
right, but top he prospect. Had a 740 OPS in Double A last year. Like, it's he's not going. I don't think he's going to hit this year.
Yeah, and shortstop's just it's not super deep, but it's deeper than it used to be. A lot of 20 home run hitting middle infielders now. Oh. Yeah, he's more of a roto guy. I took your Gurriel with my last pick, I think.
That's fine.
In a points league in like round 20, was that round 23, I think, 21? Nobody seemed, I was like, yeah, I stole the draft, take that! And everybody's like, yeah, no, you kind of didn't, though. But I think it's, you know, it's worth a shot late.
I think it's a very fine last round pick.
Well, thank you.
And Swanson is too, but
yeah.
I don't know what the fantasy upside is.
With Swanson, you're basically betting on a like Francisco Lindor type of outbreak. Scott and I had this conversation. It's,
right.
It's betting on the pedigree. It's betting on the scouting reports outpacing the numbers for a guy who was the consensus number one pick, top prospect, etc.
Okay, can I suggest an early team name?
Okay.
Dansby Samsonite.
What the hell is that even?
I believe.
Like,
let me see if I can follow the.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's a reference to Dumb and Dumber,
right?
Okay.
And well, Mary's last name is Swanson, and he can't remember it. He's like, Swami, whatever. And he goes, Samson. He looks at her briefcase. Samsonite. I was way off.
I'm sorry.
It's funny.
I don't want to say anything bad about Dumb and Dumber. It's not as bad as the Muppets or anything, but. It's
You don't like Dumb and Dumber?
It's really overrated.
Oh, you are so overrated. You are so overrated. I can't believe you just said that.
Wait, I'm overrated? I don't think anybody actually thinks I'm good, so I can't be overrated.
Fair.
All right. This is from Mark in Maple Grove, Minnesota. Hey, Bombo, Hoskin, and Boof.
Whoa, Maple Grove.
No, thank you for singing. Those would be Bombo Rivera, Hoskin Powell, and Boof Bonser, all played for the Twins. Unusual
names. Fantastic names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What kind of a season do you think Tyson Ross will have?
He's got to get on a team first.
No, he doesn't. Also overrated.
Fair. I've had a really hard time ranking him. The upside that he showed in the previous 2 years, really high. He's a big strikeout guy. Who keeps the ball on the ground, but the injuries last year are a real concern.
Yeah, it really depends on where he signs for me as well. If he goes somewhere into
the Rangers,
good environment,
for the last talk,
and I guess that's okay.
Well, like, why would that's pretty bad. I mean, if it's going to depend where he signs, then
he's a.
Well, the nice thing about the Rangers is he's at least going to get a lot of wins,
and he's a ground ball pitcher.
He's never really had a home run problem.
All right, so then why does it matter where he signs?
I don't want him to go to a bad team with a defense that sucks.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, right now, if you're doing a draft, have you been taking Tyson Ross at all? Is he getting drafted?
He should be drafted. Okay. He was one of my sleepers last year because I didn't think anybody was paying attention to his numbers from the 2 years before. And then he was just hurt the whole year. I had him on, like, every fantasy team that I drafted.
Yeah, he's I have him 58th, the starting pitcher, but that could move up when he signs.
That's quite a bit higher than I have him. Okay. I've got him in the Lance Lynn range, and I love him.
Man, what a year he had last year. 5 1/3 innings, 7 earned runs, in his only start.
Just it kind of looks like he lost it last year.
I mean, if he could only throw 5 1/3 innings. It's only 5 1/3 more than I threw.
He threw 196 innings in 2015, Tyson Ross. And I'm looking at the game log, and I don't even know how he did that. He barely ever went more than six innings.
If Chris threw 5 1/3 innings in the majors and we told him you got to get through 5 1/3, how long would that take?
Oh, man.
Months. Like recording 16 outs at the major league level? Yes.
Could you do it in a season?
Yeah, I don't think. Maybe.
There'd be enough atom balls, you know, just hard line drives that were caught by someone. All right, here's the next question. I really want to talk about this guy here. I'm sort of excited about him. Not CJ, the guy who tweeted us, but the player he asked about. I'm excited about CJ, too. Big year for CJ. CJ wants to know, can Billy Hamilton steal 100 bases? Also, should you not draft any steals in 5x5 if you get him? In other words, you get Billy Hamilton, don't even worry about steals. What do you guys think? First of all, can he steal 100 bases? And if you draft Billy Hamilton, is that the only steal guy that you need? Hamilton stole 58 in 119 games last year.
I would say you should probably not target another big steals guy. Because you're going to get some guys that'll steal 10, 15 bases also. He shouldn't be the only person who steals a base for you. But
he won't be.
The upside of getting him is that you don't have to reach for those lower end guys.
His 162 game pace over the past two seasons combined would be an 80 steal season. Now, he's not going to play 162 games.
Right.
I don't think 100 is within the range. Like, you have to take into account that if he got to September and he had 85, he's going for it. But I don't think that's like 25 to 30 stolen base variance. I don't
think
that's
within the range. Let's just put it this way. In his career, he has stolen a base on 41% of the opportunities that he has had to steal a base. That means a base was open ahead of him. To get to 100 steals, he probably
Wait. Before you even do that, I really think you need to eliminate his rookie season. Because he got picked off a lot in that rookie season, and his percentage was terrible, and he talked about how he had to learn the pitchers, and it seems like he absolutely did do that, because in 2015 and 2016, his rate was much better.
Okay.
That's my personal take.
43.9%. We'll give him the extra 3%. He would need to reach base about 240 times to steal 100 bases at that clip.
Yeah, I don't think he can get 900 plate appearances.
That's
the other part of Billy Hamilton, because I want to talk about him. I think he is probably the single most interesting fantasy hitter. You know, just in terms of when you're drafting him, it is so dependent on league format. But this is what I want to bring up with him. 2014 was his rookie season. He hit 250. Hamilton hit 6 home runs. He stole 56 bases in 79 attempts. As I mentioned, terrible percentage, but got better. That was in 152 games. So 250, 6 home runs, only 48 RBIs, 72 runs batted in, 56 steals. That made him the number 17 outfielder in Roto. But that's a little subjective, because, you know, it's not like points leagues where you score a total and it's, you know, it's an obvious ranking. It made him the number 33 outfielder in points leagues. So I personally think that in points leagues, Hamilton could be a huge steal. And you look at what he did at the end of last year. He batted .295 in his last 43 games, but his plate discipline was a lot better. He had 35 steals in 43 games, by the way, and he scored 30 runs, 20 walks, 37 strikeouts. He had a .371 on base. So I don't think you can look at those 43 games and expect him to keep that up, but he played really well down the stretch last year. I could not get farther away from Billy Hamilton last year. Kind of want to draft him this year.
I mean, let's just do a simple exercise with him. Take the on-base percentage he posted last year, .320, which was 50 points higher than the previous year and 30 points higher than his rookie season. Let's give him the number of plate appearances he had in 2014, and let's give him his stolen base rate based on times on base from his last two seasons. This is kind of like a best-case scenario, Billy Hamilton. It's 84 steals. So That's amazing. If he steals 84 bases, he's going to be a top 15 fantasy option at the outfield position.
Yeah, in both formats, not just
But like the downside is the last two seasons.
Oh, the downside is he's got a 260 on base percentage in July, and they just stopped playing him.
Yeah, and he needs to hit leadoff, or else the runs are going to be terrible. And he's going to be a one-category guy.
But if, a lot of times if he hits leadoff, the offense is terrible.
Yeah, but the Reds
still,
are
it's
terrible.
Plate appearances. It's opportunities. He's still going to... Like, last year was not a very good year for him overall. And as a leadoff hitter, he scored 51 runs in 77 games, like as batting first or second. That's tremendous.
Yeah, last year was a pretty good year for Billy Hamilton.
Because he turned it on in those last 43 games. I think before that he was pretty dreadful, no?
Yes. He had a 236 average and 283 on-base percentage in the first half.
My guess is I'm not going to get him in any roto leagues because people are going to take him really early, but I would like to get him in some points leagues because there's just hidden value with those steals. They're so valuable.
He did somehow have a 357 on-base percentage batting leadoff last year.
Oh, there you go.
All right. I don't know how.
All right, that's William Hamilton. Let's go to this next email from the other Scott. Dear Humpty Hump, Tupac, and Chopmaster J.
Yeah, I got that.
Who
I
are
prefer
they?
Busta Rhymes.
I mean, I know who Tupac is, and I think I know Humpty Hump.
Yeah, I do the Humpty Hump.
Yeah. Can you guys talk a little bit about your process for ranking players? Do you make your own projections? Do you use a projection system? If so, which one?
I've got a much different... this is my first year doing fantasy baseball player rankings, and Heath and I couldn't be more different. I have a whole system where I take like different projection systems from different places, throw them all together, I make a stew, and then I kind of go from there.
Yeah.
Heath just kind of looks at it.
Yeah, I just like, do I like this guy better or this guy better? Do I like this guy better or this guy better?
My brain doesn't work that way.
The funny thing, though, because I've, with football especially, I've done similar to what Chris is doing. And it's a good starting point. I just think that...
No, that's not my ending point.
Right.
That's my starting point.
Right. When I do that, I realize that then for the month and a half to 2 months leading up to the season, I did the same thing I'm doing now. And so I guess I just stopped doing the first part. I just did it all that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, and a lot of it is like I change my rankings after most of our podcasts.
Yeah.
Because I hear Scott or Chris or you say smart things and I change my mind a little bit.
And there's just players that look, I think a big part of the problem with the reason I couldn't do your way of it, of doing it, is like it's hard to look at a list and say who's missing.
Yeah.
I need to have everyone roughly where they're supposed to be.
Yep.
And then I move from there based on personal preference or expectations or what have you.
What is the single most important thing, if there is one, when you are ranking, let's say, a hitter? Is it like last year's numbers, last 3 years? Do you care? Is it completely different? Is there no answer to that question?
Yeah, there's definitely not any specific answer to that question because you're talking about Look at someone like Andrew Benintendi. I think that's a good example. We don't really have anything to go on. So there's a lot of intuition there. There's a lot of expectation.
Well,
with
not
players
then
that have veterans. Played, I think step one is playing time.
Oh, okay.
Step two for players that have played. Mm-hmm. If you want, like I personally, if I wanted one catch-all stat that I was going to start for with hitters, would probably be Woba. And then I'll add other things to that, but that's probably where if I could only use one stat to start to rank everyone, it'd probably be their WOBA over the last 3 years.
Okay. And that's great because I don't understand how you people can call it WOBA and not call it BABIP. It just does not make any sense.
Well, BABIP sounds dumb.
No, yeah. BABIP sounds dumb.
And WOBA sounds dumb.
WOBA does sound dumb. Just like BABIP.
So BABIP
and WOBA,
and it's WOBA because we don't want to sound like clowns.
Don't say clowns. You can say clowns when Scott isn't here. All right, next question. is from Double H. He says, "Dear Pennywise, Billy, and Pogo." I'm guessing those are clowns.
I believe so.
I know Pennywise was a punk band in the 90s.
Dude, Pennywise is the clown from It. Get a life, Chris. Sure.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Did
you guys read it? I don't like horror movies.
But did you read it?
No.
No, I never read it.
I never saw it either.
That was the first, like, huge, I think it was like 600 pages or something. It was the first really big book I read. Outstanding.
Yeah, I think they're making a remake.
28.
I was probably 11.
28. Okay. Next question. Or no, same question from Double H. Which of these mid-round starting pitchers would you be most likely to draft in a 10-team roto league? I think there's an easy answer here, but who are you most likely to draft? Trevor Bauer, John Gray, James Paxton, or Carlos Rodon?
Probably Carlos Rodon.
I thought that was the easy answer.
But I feel like everyone else might like Carlos Rodon a lot more than I do.
Okay.
I think this guy just fooled Adam.
Oh, yeah?
And it's really smart. I think he's trying to choose between one of these guys to keep. I didn't want to ask a keeper question because you wouldn't answer it. So he phrased it this way.
Smart move.
Isn't I'm going to believe that. I'd say John Gray and then Rodon.
I actually do have John Gray one spot higher than Carlos Rodon checking my rankings. Trevor Bauer's 27 spots behind them.
By the way, I think Smiley and Paxton on the same team, like, I kind of feel like I'm going to be a Mariners fan this year.
And I like Paxton more than Bauer.
Yeah, for sure. Paxton's somewhere in the middle.
Our next question is a pitching question. It comes from Kyle. Kyle wants to know, how many aces are you trying to draft this year? Last year you wanted to get two guys in the top tier. How many aces are you trying to draft this year? I don't remember exactly what it was last year. It was like two guys in the top 20, I think, was what we were trying to draft.
Right. We had quite a discussion last year about how big that top tier was. I would say this year that top tier is 8 pitchers for me. And I'm not going to press to get one. It's really going to depend on how the draft goes. I'd like to have one of those top 8 guys.
But how many pitchers do you feel comfortable with as your ace? You know, there are 20 aces? You know what I'm asking?
Right, I'm saying there are 8.
There are 8 elites. Okay, so what if, looking at your rankings now, what if Cole Hamels, who you have 13th, or Yu Darvish, you have 12th, or Carrasco, 14th, like, are you okay with them as your number one?
If I have them as my number one, I feel like I should have a better offense than most everybody else.
Yeah. Okay. I'm looking at a staff that I have from an early draft that we did last month or 2 months ago. I have Yu Darvish, Cole Hamels, Garrett Cole, Steven Matz, James Paxton, bunch of upside guys later. But I missed on the aces. So I took Darvish, and then I probably took Hamels not long after, and then I probably took Cole not long after that, because if you do miss out, then you want to back them up. If you do miss out on one of the true, like, aces, no doubt about it, or, you know, there's never such thing, but, you know, the Sale, Bumgarner, Arrieta, Kluber, Price, Kershaw, whatever. You miss out on them, you probably want to draft pitchers a little bit earlier after that, you know, like the first three.
What makes those 8 or 9 guys aces and someone like Steven Strasburg or Yu Darvish or even Carlos Carrasco or Zach Greinke, Chris Archer, isn't necessarily the maximum outcome, like the high upside outcome for Chris Archer is probably pretty comparable to someone like Corey Kluber.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's just Corey Kluber's so much more safe. But there's a lot of high upside guys that I think you can get in the middle rounds that can make it okay to pass on an ace and still not invest too much in your pitching staff. You know, you mentioned Steven Matz. He's someone who I think could be a very high-end pitcher. Lance McCullers, Julio Urias. There's lots of guys out there who I think could take a big jump.
Yeah, but you don't want to depend on them. Because depending on if last year is repeatable. We saw a huge shift in waiver wire. Right, in waiver wire availability. Because last year, you couldn't get pitchers on the waiver wire like you ordinarily could. Pitching sucked, and hitters were available on the waiver wire. You
know, well, but that's not...
Is that the new normal is the question?
I don't know.
Also, that doesn't change. I think it's sort of similar to the RB versus wide receiver debate
exactly.
That we're going to have.
That's what I was going
to
say.
But I would also say that in a league where pitching is more scarce, it's more scarce for everyone.
Yeah, but you got to get it in the draft.
I don't think that's necessarily true. There were plenty of pitchers who were drafted high last year who struggled, and there were plenty of pitchers drafted low who had great seasons.
That's going to be true at any position. But what I'm saying is, like, in the past, you could say, I'm not going to invest heavily in starting pitcher because there's going to be plenty of it on the waiver wire. There's so many good high upside guys late, which is also true.
Well, it's the same thing with zero RB in football. It's more that pitchers are so much more volatile. And if you're investing big draft capital in your high-end pitchers, you're investing in inherently riskier, more volatile player.
But that's we never say invest a lot of high-end picks or of early picks. I'm saying that if you let me give a real life example and see the rounds that I actually drafted Darvish and Hamels and Cole. So did not get a top 10 pitcher. So I took Darvish in the 5th round,
mm-hmm.
and Hamels in the 7th round, and Cole at the end of the 8th round.
Yeah,
so that's
what
I'm talking
about.
I mean, you know, I had no pitchers with my first 4 picks.
Yeah, I think that's a perfectly fine approach, and I don't hate that as your top 3.
Yeah, but then I did make sure that 3 of my next 4 picks were pitchers. You know, so that's all I'm saying is if you miss out on the guys who are going to seem like the most likely for more than 200 innings, 200 strikeouts, and just good production overall, then you probably want to make sure you don't miss out on the next tier.
Make sure that at the end of the draft you're not taking Bartolo Colon, you're taking Joe Musgrove.
That's exactly
Robert
who I took.
Selman.
I think I took McCullers, Musgrove, those kind of guys. Yeah. I have Musgrove, McCullers, Shoemaker, and Jason Hamill, who I guess I'm the only person who likes. Probably wouldn't make that pick if I could do it again.
Yeah, no, when you do this, you have to make sure that the guys you're drafting late are those guys with the huge upside.
I saw a rumor about Jason Hamill that I wonder if you would like or dislike.
Yankees?
Yeah.
I would love it on a 1-year deal.
But it would hurt his fantasy value.
You know, look, the 2 years in a row, I think, I have to, off the top of my head, I feel like Hamill's been a really good pitcher for like 4 months.
Right.
So that's fine. I'll take that. The trade him at the All-Star break. Trade him at the deadline. All right. There was a report, I think, from Heyman that nobody wanted to give him more than a year. So he might just be damaged goods, used up goods at this point. A question from Brett in Jersey. Dear Aaron, Matt, Russell, and Dak. I know them. Should I chase stats for pitchers based on teams with good defenses or offenses for wins?
That should be the tiebreaker. You should be looking at the true talent level type of stats, FIP,
right.
CRX, FIP, and you know, a guy on the Mariners with a good outfield defense, Hisashi Iwakuma, someone who I would expect will outperform their peripherals based on the team that they're on this year.
I will just say that we saw an example of how that can go wrong with Sonny Gray last year.
Sure.
And defensive statistics are not the most stable.
Yes.
Those can change in a hurry. The A's defense went from really good to god awful last year, and that had a big part in Gray's.
They'll be better this year, probably.
Just draft all the Cubs pitchers. You get the best of both worlds.
Even that, their defense is going to regress.
Yeah.
I only have a couple more questions here, but I do want to know who's going to win the football games this weekend. What do you think? Let's start with Seahawks at Falcons.
This is a baseball podcast, Adam.
Answer the question.
Seahawks.
What did you say, Chris?
Seattle.
All right, I'll take the Falcons.
You don't feel good about it.
Does anybody feel good about it?
No, it's Seattle.
I really like the Falcons.
Yeah, but it's not Seattle anymore. They haven't been Seattle without Earl Thomas.
That's how I feel.
They looked pretty Seattle last week.
Yeah, it's a big step up. Detroit was a fraud.
Detroit's bad.
They're not bad. They weren't.
Bad.
They're not Atlanta. All right, what was my next question? Houston, New England. Who do you guys like? Well, let's do it with the spread, 15.5.
I think I'd probably take Houston at that spread. That defense is really good.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Patriots cover. Patriots are going to win, though. How about the Packers at the Cowboys? We had a good stat on CBSSports.com about rookie quarterbacks going up against veteran quarterbacks in the playoffs.
Oh, I want to take Green Bay, but I think Jordy being out is enough for me to take the Cowboys.
Yeah, I'll go there.
I think I'm going to take the Packers.
I think you're probably right.
All right. And what's the last game? Oh, Steelers-Chiefs.
Kansas City. Heath's going to take the Chiefs.
I think Heath's going to take the Steelers. I think he hates Alex Smith.
Oh, you want me to go first?
Yeah.
I'll take the Steelers.
I'll go with the Chiefs.
I will also take the Steelers. But I don't hate Alex Smith. I think he's a nice guy. Obi from Boston asks, who are some guys that you loved last year that didn't produce but could bounce back and be under everyone's radar? Drew Smiley.
Besides Tyson Ross?
Any of the rookie pitchers from last year who weren't very good. Jose Berríos, Tyler Glasnow, Blake Snell. All of those guys, I think, have great post-type sleeper potential. That's a tough question.
We should probably do something besides pitchers, too.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
So I shouldn't say Taiwan Walker?
Taiwan Walker fits. Let's see. At first, but I'm going to go through the positions. I can find one at every position. I missed all kinds of things, surely.
Jose Abreu.
Yeah, everybody liked him, though.
Okay, so who was your guy?
Oh, well, I mean, Dustin Puig for me, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Chris Davis.
Which one?
With a C. Chris Davis with a K was better than I thought. Devin Travis.
That's one I was thinking of. I like that. Michael Franco.
Michael Franco for sure.
Miguel Sano for me.
Yeah.
I'm satisfied.
Hey, Eugenio Suarez.
Really?
Yeah. And so, he was really good for the first 2 months of last year?
Yes.
He's outstanding.
Okay.
And then the Royals.
The Royals. All right, last question here. I didn't fact check these stats, so I'm gonna
they look right.
But I don't have the guy's name. What a loser I am.
No sources, not fact checked.
Fake news question here. All right, I'm gonna try to find his name in my inbox. But
Thomas.
In the meantime.
That was Thomas.
Thomas. It's from Thomas. Thank you. In the meantime, here's the question from Thomas. Okay, where's the question? Here it is. Why doesn't Nolan Arenado have an inflated Coors Field BABIP? Todd Helton, career 342 BABIP at home. Carlos Gonzalez, career 357 at home. Corey Dickerson, 342 at home in Coors Field. Nolan Arenado, career 305 BABIP at home. I know he's an extreme fly ball hitter, but...
That's pretty much...
Yeah, well, the question is, could he have a 340 BABIP season and be even better? Nolan Arenado.
He certainly could have a high BABIP season.
Well, that's the thing. Is BABIP, it just comes and goes.
Yeah, but there are certain trends that you look at with what really – I think there is a – and this is a good question because I think it gets to what a lot of people tend to miss about Coors Field, which is that it's not just home runs. Mm-hmm. It's all kinds of hits. But Nolan Arenado is, like you said, an extreme fly ball pitcher. You're looking at someone who's getting 25 to 30 infield fly balls a year. That alone is going to knock off, 15 to 20 points off your BABIP?
Sure. They're,
whatever you say.
He's a career 291 BABIP guy overall. And he's been remarkably consistent. 296, 294, 284, 293. You don't normally see players' BABIPs just stay constant like that. He could very easily have a year where it was 330, and it wouldn't be all that surprising. We would just say the next year it's not going to be 330.
Well, what was 330?
His BABIP.
Oh, his BABIP, okay.
But he could also have a BABIP year of 260, and it wouldn't be that surprising.
Yeah, he's a slow fly ball hitter. who hits a lot of infield fly balls, even for a fly ball hitter. You know, a lot of the BABIP fluctuation is going to come on some of those in between hits.
Right.
He's not going to get a lot of those.
The funniest pronunciation I heard of the word was BABIP. I think Nando used to say that. It was really definitely wrong. That I know for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely BABIP. It's definitely JIF.
I think it's really interesting, though, watching his WOBE just over his career go. Because it moves a lot more than the BABIP.
Okay, well, this is getting confusing. So we're going to end the show. Thank you, guys. This was a fun mailbag. I love mailbags. I appreciate all the feedback from the listeners. It's January 12th, and we've got so many people engaged already, and that is great. So we're excited for 2017. We're excited for the year. And we'll be back next week with another edition of the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. Have a great weekend. Talk to you then.